Junction on CILU Radio. If you're listening on a Tuesday morning, this is the end of the show, and Cub is going to play us out. If you're listening on a Sunday night, we have another half hour of great music for you, so stay tuned. In fact, stay tuned anyway. CILU is great.
Thank you. use a War Amps key tag, you're giving yourself peace of mind, and you're supporting the CHAMP program for child amputees. If you lose your keys, the War Amps can return them to you by courier with the help of your personalized key tag. Key return by courier. It's simple, fast, and it's free. What's more, thanks to your support, child amputees receive the artificial limbs they need to lead active lives. Order your key tags at 1-800-250-3030 or waramps.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Good morning. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. Sorry about my little hiatus the last couple weeks. They were repeat shows. I had exams with school and was taking a little break, but I'm back this year for this year's Christmas episode. The date of recording this is the 20th, so it's a few days early, but seeing as this is the last episode before Christmas, I thought this would be a good time to talk about our episode, start our episode. Now, just a quick reminder for everybody. There's not much info as of yet, but today is Sunday the 20th of December, and it's been announced that Ontario is very likely to go into a full grey lockdown starting December 24th, which should be Thursday, I believe. So, just a quick reminder to stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask, social distance, and try to stay out of the stores because I'm sure they'll be busy with the couple days leading up to Christmas, especially with everything shutting down on the 24th. So hopefully everyone stays safe and happy and healthy, and I hope everyone has a Merry Christmas. With that being said, I'd like to start today's episode off actually talking about, well, I guess today is a good day. The day I'm recording this is kind of a special day. Now, we've talked about this before, but, well, we've talked about the solstice, the equinox, and all of that. But today is the shortest day of the year. Now, sorry, tomorrow is the shortest day of the year, on Monday the 21st, which is the winter solstice, when winter starts. It's the shortest day of the year. Now, I'll just mention it because I know, and he's probably listening, but it's my grandfather's favorite day of the year. I remember today, it might be today, as far as I read, it's tomorrow, but it might actually be today, or it might have been today last year, but either way, my mom was talking to my grandfather, and he wanted to make sure everyone knew that it's the shortest day of the year. So as of this recording, it'll have passed, but just a reminder that the shortest day of the year just passed, and the days are starting to get longer again, and that is starting tomorrow. Will be winter time. So winter is starting. Now, I won't go super crazy into all of that because today's episode's on Christmas. I just thought I would mention it quickly. Now, when we talk about Christmas this year, I'd like to talk about some stuff I don't think I talked about last year. For example, I don't believe I mentioned anything about Christmas trees and maybe some different trivia. But first, I want to start off with kind of the history of Christmas. Now, I'm sure most people know, but Christmas is very much a Christian holiday. And the Christian holiday celebrates the birth of Jesus Christ. Now, as much as it may not actually be when Jesus Christ was born, it's when the date was set. And I might get into it a little bit later in the show. I may or may not, because I believe I talked about it last year, and I'd like to make it a little bit different from that one. But it was set as Christmas. And, well, Christmas is how we know it, and it's been like that for over 1,000 years now. And it's very much a Christian holiday. Now, in the church world, the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas have special names. What are these names? It's Advent. There's 4 weeks in Advent. 3 blue or purple candles and 1 pink candle. Where the pink candle is the third Sunday in December. And this is very common on Advent wreaths, which I'm sure, if not everyone has done them, I'm sure many people have probably done some sort of, maybe at church or at your house. I know not everyone may be Christian, but I'm sure people have heard of these Advent wreaths. Conversely, lots of people may also do a Advent calendar. There's different types, but a very common one is what? Very common Advent calendar is 31 days of chocolate. Each day you open up a little door and you get some chocolate. Now, there's been many other types of Advent calendars made, and a lot of them are pretty unique. For example, I figured out recently that Circle K has some promotion going on where they have an Advent calendar and you have a chance to win like chips or a pop or like a small prize for doing it. And there's also, I believe, Lego does a type of Advent calendar where every day you open up a little box and you get to make a little Lego figurine or Lego something or other. And there's been many different types created. And Advent calendars have kind of become pretty popular. Now, to start out the episode, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Christmas tree. Now, this has become a staple of Christmas. And I'm sure even people that may not really celebrate Christmas, I'm sure everyone tries to have one and, you know, put your presents under the tree. Some people might even have the train that goes around. You know, the one you put batteries in and you put the circle around underneath the Christmas tree. I remember as a kid that used to be one of my favorite things to put together on Christmas, and I used to get little like mega blocks, those big plastic blocks that you put together like little kids 3 and 4 would, and we'd make tunnels for the train to go through. But everyone probably has a similar Christmas story like that, you know, some type of Christmas tree with, you know, whether it's real or fake, whether it has a train in it or not, whether you put your presents under it, how you decorate it, whether you have an angel, a star, or just some pieces of garland, whether it's big, small, indoor, outdoor. I'm sure everyone has their story of their Christmas tree, and everyone has some type of tradition. And I know it can differ quite drastically. But where did it start? Well, it goes back to the symbolic use of what tree in ancient Greece and Rome? Well, it has a symbolic use. It goes back to the symbolic use of evergreens in ancient Egypt and Rome. And it continues in the German tradition of candlelit Christmas trees, first brought to America in the 1800s. So, long before the advent of Christianity, plants and trees that remained green all year had a special meaning for people in the winter. Just as people today decorate their homes during the festive season with pine, spruce, and fir trees, ancient people hung evergreen bows over their doors and windows. Now, a bow would be, you know, like the big, you know, almost like a branch. One of the branches, say you go out into the wilderness and there's a balsam fir tree and it's got like a big long branch with the nice soft pine needles on the end. You'd cut that off. And it's very common when you're making like a survival shelter, you'll cut the boughs off and it makes a nice soft bed. And I'm sure people have also, maybe not real evergreen boughs, but probably, you know, put, you know, a fake thing of like a reef or something like that, you know, along your steps or on your windowsill. That's what it means by an evergreen bough. In many countries, it was believed that evergreens would keep away what? It was believed that they'd keep away witches, ghosts, evil spirits, and illness. In the Northern Hemisphere, the shortest day and the longest night of the year fall on December 21st or 22nd, which, as I said before, is the what? The winter solstice. Many ancient people believed that the sun was a god, which I, for example, I believe the Egyptians, it was Ra. They had their sun god. And I believe I've heard of it in, yeah, Ra. I don't know much about Ra, but the Egyptian sun god is Ra. Now, many believe that the sun was a god and that winter came every year because the sun god became sick and weak. They celebrated the solstice because it meant that at last the sun god would begin to get well. Evergreen boughs reminded them that all green plants would grow again when the sun god was strong and the summer would return. Like I just mentioned, the ancient Egyptians worshipped the sun god Ra, who had the head of a hawk and wore the sun as what? Wore the sun as a blazing disc in his crown. At the solstice, when Ra began to recover from his illness, Egyptians filled their homes with green palm rushes, which symbolized for them the triumph of life over death. Early Romans marked the solstice with a feast called Saturnalia, in honor of Saturn, the god of agriculture. I don't know whether or not we'll get into Saturnalia later in the episode, but Christmas has a lot of roots in the idea of Saturnalia. It's very deeply rooted in this Roman festival. And I talked a lot about it in last year's episode, but we may cover it again later. The Romans knew that the solstice meant that soon farms and orchards would be green and fruitful again. To mark the occasion, they decorated their homes and temples with evergreen boughs. In Northern Europe, the mysterious Druids, the priests of the ancient Celts, also decorated their temples with evergreen boughs as a symbol of everlasting life. Even the fierce Vikings in Scandinavia thought that evergreens were a special plant of the sun god Balder. Now, what country is credited with starting the Christmas tree tradition we all know and love? And in what century? Just a quick side note. A lot of my info today is coming from history.com. Turns out that Germany is credited with starting the Christmas tree tradition we know. And it was in the 16th century when devout Christians brought decorated trees into their homes. Some built Christmas pyramids of wood and decorated them with evergreens and candles if wood was scarce. It's widely held belief that Martin Luther, the 16th century Protestant reformer, first added lit candles to a tree. Walking towards his home one winter evening, composing a sermon, he was awed by the brilliance of stars twinkling amidst evergreens. To recapture the scene for his family, he erected a tree in the main room and wired its branches with lighted candles. As we all see, this is clearly where it started. And It's amazing to think that it had such humble beginnings. Now, quickly before we move on, an interesting fact from the U.S. In how many states in the U.S. are Christmas trees grown? Christmas trees are grown in all 50 states of America, including Hawaii and Alaska. And I'm sure that would be similar in Canada, where we have arguably almost a better climate to grow them, especially considering certain types of trees that grow well in Canada are what we use for Christmas trees, which I'd like to talk about a little bit later. Now, the Americas have Christmas trees as well, but where did they come from? Most 19th century Americans found Christmas trees an oddity. The first record of one being on display was in the 1830s by the German settlers of what state? By the German settlers of Pennsylvania. Although trees had been a tradition in many German homes much earlier, the Pennsylvania German settlements had community trees as early as 1747. But as late as 1840s, Christmas trees were seen as pagan symbols and not accepted by most Americans. Again, most of this comes out of America, but I'm sure there's a much similar story about Canada. It's not surprising, though, that many other festive Christmas customs, the tree was adopted much later in America. To the New England Puritans, Christmas was sacred. The Pilgrim's second governor, William Brantford, wrote that he tried hard to stamp out pagan mockery of the observance, penalizing any frivolity. The influential Oliver Cromwell preached against the heathen traditions of Christmas carols, decorated trees, and any joyful expression that desecrated that sacred event. In 1659, the General Court of Massachusetts enacted a law making any observance of December 25th, other than a church service, a penal offense. People were fined for hanging decorations. And that stern psalmody continued until the 19th century, when the influx of German and Irish immigrants undermined the Puritan legacy. In 1846, the popular royals, Queen Victoria and her German prince, Albert, were sketched in the Illustrated London News, standing with their children around what? Of course, pretty easy, a Christmas tree. Unlike the previous royal family, Victoria was very popular with her subjects, and what was done at court immediately became fashionable, not only in Britain, but with fashion-conscious East Coast American society. The Christmas tree had arrived. By the 1890s, Christmas ornaments were arriving from Germany, and Christmas tree popularity was on the rise around the U.S. It was noted that Europeans used small trees about 4 feet in height, while Americans liked their Christmas trees to reach from floor to ceiling. In the early 20th century, Americans decorated their trees mainly with homemade ornaments, while German-American sect continued to use apples, nuts, and marzipan cookies. Popcorn joined in after being dyed bright colors and interlaced with berries and nuts. Electricity brought about Christmas lights, making it possible for Christmas trees to glow for days on end. With this, Christmas trees began to appear in town squares across the country, and having a Christmas tree in the home became, well, an American and everywhere else tradition. Now, the next is probably one we've all heard about. It's a special Christmas tree, which is located in New York City at the corner of, which is west of 5th Avenue from 47th through 51st Streets, and it's kind of a center. This is the Rockefeller Center tree, which is located in the Rockefeller Center. The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree dates back to the Depression era, The tallest tree displayed at Rockefeller Center arrived in 1948. It was what kind of tree was it that measured 100 feet tall and hailed from where? It was a Norway spruce that measured 100 feet tall and hailed from Killingworth, Connecticut. The first tree at Rockefeller Center was placed in what year? It was placed in 1931. It was a small, unadorned tree placed by construction workers at the center of the construction site. 2 years later, another tree was placed there, this time with lights. These days, the giant Rockefeller Center tree is laden with over 25,000 Christmas lights. Now, here's a few more facts that I found about Christmas trees in Canada. Of course, German settlers migrated to Canada from the U.S. in the 1700s. They brought with them many of the things associated with Christmas we cherish today. Things like advent calendars, gingerbread houses and cookies, and Christmas trees. When Queen Victoria's German husband, Prince Albert, put up a Christmas tree at Windsor Castle in 1848, the Christmas tree became a tradition throughout England, the U.S., and Canada. Many other places in the world, there are similar traditions. Now, these traditions, I'm sure we all know and love. Now, here's a little bit of trivia on them. When did Christmas trees start to be commercially sold in the United States? Turns out Christmas trees have been commercially sold in the U.S. since about 1850. Now, the next one is in 1979. The national Christmas tree was not lighted except for the top ornament. This was done in honor of what? It was done in honor of the American hostages in Iran. Between 1887 and 1933, a fishing schooner called the what would tie up the Clark Street Bridge and sell what kind of trees from Michigan to Chicagoans? The fishing schooner called the Christmas Ship would tie up at the Clark Street Bridge and sell spruce trees from Michigan to Chicagoans. The tallest living Christmas tree is believed to be the 122-foot, 91-year-old Douglas fir in the town of what? In the town of Woodinville, Washington. The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree tradition began in 1933. Franklin Pierce, the 14th president, brought the Christmas tree tradition to the White House. In 1923, President Calvin Coolidge started the National Christmas Tree Lighting Ceremony, now held every year where? It's held every year on the White House lawn. Just a quick reminder, you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. Since 1966, the National Christmas Tree Association has given a Christmas tree to the president and the first family. Most Christmas trees are cut weeks before they actually get to a retail outlet. In 1912, the first community Christmas tree in the United States was erected in New York City. Christmas trees take how many years to mature? It takes about 6 to 8 years for a Christmas tree to mature. Christmas trees are grown, like I said before, in all 50 states, including Hawaii and Alaska. 98% of Christmas trees are grown where? 98% of Christmas trees are actually grown on farms. More than about how many acres of land have been planted with Christmas trees? More than 1 million acres have been planted with Christmas trees. Now, on average, about how many Christmas trees are planted per acre? On average, over 2,000 Christmas trees are planted per acre. Here's an interesting fact. Why should you never burn your Christmas tree in your fireplace? It's because it can contribute to creosote buildup. Now, other types of trees, such as what, were used as Christmas trees in the past? Well, other types of trees such as cherry and hawthorns were used as Christmas trees in past times. Now, who came up with the idea of electric lights for Christmas trees? Well, Thomas Edison's assistant actually came up with the idea. Now, in 1963, the national Christmas tree was not lit until December 22nd because of national 30-day period of mourning following the assassination of President Kennedy. Now, why was a Christmas tree banned from the White House? And who banned it? Teddy Roosevelt banned the Christmas tree from the White House for environmental reasons. Now, in the first week, a tree in your house will consume as much as what? In the first week, a tree in your house will consume as much as a quart of water a day. Now, why was tinsel once banned by the government? It's because tinsel contained lead at one time. Most of the time now, it's just made with plastic. Now, here's the big question. What are the best-selling trees for Christmas trees? The best-selling trees are Scotch pine, Douglas fir, Fraser fir, balsam fir, and white pine. That about does it for this half of the episode. However, when we come back, I want to cover a little more in detail, maybe a little bit of kind of the where these trees grow, what they look like, and, you know, can you find them in the wild here in Thunder Bay? And when we're done that, I think we'll move on to a song and then some more Christmas trivia. Sorry if you don't enjoy talking about Christmas trees. I just think it's very interesting, especially because I myself haven't even really researched it. And it's really interesting to see where Christmas trees come from, how they started, and where they're going. Honestly, it's a pretty amazing thing to see. And it makes you think twice about, you know, how many trees do they plant and cut down for Christmas? As much as I like a real tree, fake trees do last longer, but are they really that good for the environment too? At least with Christmas trees, I'm not going to lie, for me, I would much rather get a Christmas tree, a real one. They're much nicer, and in my opinion, these Christmas trees, I mean, if you go out and you cut down a Christmas tree but plant another tree, it may take 6 to 8 years to grow again, but at least you're not cutting it and never replanting it. At least if you cut it and replant it, you might cause a little bit of a carbon footprint, but in all seriousness, the trees will grow and rejuvenate and then cut them again. So it's better than some industries. However, imagine going into a field and just seeing clear cut of, you know, 6 to 8 foot trees just gone. But in my opinion, I would go with a real tree. However, nowadays, they've also come up with a plastic Christmas tree. And I'm sure some people use those fake ones as well. I know we now have one. We used to have a real tree. But the trees, you know, can be different colors, different mixes, and they're all really nice. So Stay tuned here on CILU 102.7 FM.
CILU is sponsored in part by the Students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, an inclusive spiritual community promoting a compassionate, just, and sustainable world. Find them online at luf.ca, on Facebook, or at 129 South Algoma, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. The Live from the Rock Folk Festival, bringing the spirit of folk and folk music to Red Rock every August. Keep up to date with upcoming happenings and buy tickets online at livefromtherockfolkfestival.com. The Outpost, Lakehead University's pub, full-service restaurant, and live music venue. Find them on Facebook to stay up to date on all the happenings during the school year, like Tanker Tuesdays and Pub Night Thursdays.
Welcome back. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. If you were joining us in the first half, thank you. If you're just coming here now, welcome to the show. We're talking about Christmas and Christmas trees specifically. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy the show. Now, quickly to start this episode, I'd like to cover talking about trees. I'd like to talk about the main types of Christmas trees. So, as I said before, the common trees are the Fraser fir, the Douglas fir, the Scots pine, the balsam fir, and the eastern white pine. Let's start with the Fraser fir. In many respects, the Fraser fir is very similar to the balsam fir. It's a uniformly pyramid-shaped tree, which reaches a maximum height of about 80 feet and a diameter of 1 to 1.5 feet. Strong branches are turned slightly upwards, which gives the tree a compact appearance. Leaves, needles are flattened, dark green with a medial groove on the upper left side and two broad silvery right bands on the lower surface. They consist of several rows of stomata, or pores. Leaves are 1/2 to 1 inch long, have a broad circular base, and are usually dark green on the upper surface and lighter on the lower. On lower branches, leaves are two ranked, occurring in two opposite rows. On upper twigs, leaves tend to curl upwards, forming a more U-shaped appearance. Bark is usually gray or gray-brown, thin, smooth, with numerous resin blisters on young trees. As they become older, the bark tends to develop into thin, papery scales. The combination of form, needle retention, dark blue-green color, pleasant scent, and excellent shipping characteristics has led to the Fraser fir being a most popular Christmas tree species. It requires from 7 to 10 years in the field to produce a 5 to 7 foot tree. This is a very common Christmas tree. Now, the Fraser fir is, well, it is native to the Appalachian Mountains of the southeastern U.S., although it is closely related to the balsam fir, and it's sometimes considered a subspecies or variety of the balsam fir. Now, I'm getting a lot of my info from Ontario websites, ministry websites, and christmastrees.ontario.ca. Now, the next one is the Scots pine. Now, what is the Latin name for the Scots pine? Latin name is Pinus sylvestris. That would be the name of the species. What is it for Fraser fir? It's Abies fraseri. Now, the Scots pine falls on the list of how popular is the Scots pine for Christmas trees? Well, it turns out Scots pines are the most popular Canadian Christmas tree. However, they're not native to North America. In spite of its name, the Scots pine is found throughout Europe and Asia. It was introduced to Canada by Christmas tree farmers and can now sometimes be found growing in the wild. Scots pine is a thick, hardy tree that holds its needle well over the holidays. Trees grown on a farm respond well to pruning and grow in well-rounded conical shapes with a few breaks in the foliage. The color of the pine is variable. Some may be blue-green, while others are yellow-green. The needles appear in clusters of two, are usually twisted, and are about 4 to 8 centimeters long. The bark on the upper portion of the stems is orange or orangish-brown and is smooth to the touch. Closer to the trunk, it is a grayish or reddish-brown, and the trunk is often fissured in scaly plates. And the cones grow both singly and in groups of two and three, and are up to 8 centimeters long. They're usually yellow-brown and contain tiny prickles on the cone scales. Now, the interesting thing is that what is an important thing about the Scots pine in Ontario? Well, it turns out that it is actually an invasive species to Ontario, and the government actually lays out a best management practices for this pine tree. And it's a pretty interesting thing. Now, it's I don't know what it really says about it, but there's a whole thing talking about the tree, what it looks like, where it's found, and basically just a lot of different information about it. I find it kind of interesting that it is an invasive species, and understandably it is. However, it is amazing that we still sell this kind of, or at least as far as I know, they still sell this kind of Christmas tree. It's another reason why it may be better to do a fake tree, because it doesn't have any risks to it. However, it's not great for the environment. It actually puts some other species at risk. Now, this is about it for the Scots pine. If you're interested, if you just look up Scots pine, I actually found one of the newest things about, one of the first things on Google for Scots pine is actually the Ontario PDF document from, I believe, 2017. So if you're interested, there might be a good place to check. The next tree we're going to talk about is one that I'm sure many people from Northern Ontario may be familiar with, as I believe it can be native to Northern Ontario. And I don't know how many people maybe have been to Quetico Provincial Park or know anything about trees and have been out maybe to some remote areas. But this tree has the name Pinus strobus, and it's a very well-known type of Christmas tree. It is the white pine. It's the most beautiful of all Christmas tree varieties, even though its soft needles make it difficult to decorate. It is the largest tree that grows in eastern Canada and can be seen in the north, towering above the boreal forest. In the wild, it can reach diameters of 1.5 meters and heights of 45 meters. Now, 1.5 meters of depth is probably close to 5.5, 6 feet. And 45 meters in feet is 147 feet. So it reaches about 5 feet in diameter and about 145 feet. Or sorry, 147 feet in height. They're massive, massive trees. And it's pretty crazy. And it grows best quickly and best in full sunlight. However, young trees can tolerate some shade. Because of the size and strength, the white pine was once used to make the masts of sailing ships. Today, it's valued by carpenters because its smooth, white wood contains few knot holes and does not twist or shrink. Now, it also has the eastern white pine's cones are about 8 to 20 centimeters long, and they hang down from the branches. Good seed crops aren't produced until the trees are 20 to 30 years old, and then only every 3 to 5 years. Its bark is dark grayish brown with brown, thick ridges that are 2 to 5 centimeters thick. And like I said before, they are massive, massive trees. And it grows in any type of soil, but it prefers sand or sandy loam. And fun fact, the white pine, the eastern white pine, is the provincial tree of Ontario. And if you plant it in direct sun, it will grow quickly and is ideal for blocking an unsightly view or for creating shade for your house. If it grows somewhere that is exposed to a lot of wind, the eastern white pine can become a bit lopsided with small, short branches on the side that faces the wind. Now, these are one of my favorite trees. They're big, beautiful trees. However, there's a lot, I believe there is some things about the tree. I believe there is some type of certain regulations about planting it or like digging it up that and like cutting it down. However, it is a very, very beautiful tree. And a funny story about those big pine cones themselves. I remember in the fall time, they'd always fall off of the tree at my grandparents' house, and my grandfather would always have to hate to pick them up because it wasn't like you could just rake, or he had one of those suck machines that would bring the leaves in and mulch them, but the pine cones wouldn't mulch, so you had to, you know, go around and clean them out separately, and the pine needles. And I remember one year it was windy enough that one of the branches fell into their neighbor's yard. Either way, they are very nice trees. And they are, I believe they can also be older trees as well. The eastern white pine is, there's a lot to it. But they can live from 200 to even 450 years old. And this is just a few small facts of the tree. And there's actually a tree, if you've ever been to Quetico Provincial Park, there's a white pine tree right where the two roads split that even got struck by lightning and is still alive. I'm going to end off talking about the white pine for now, but there's a lot of beauty in the tree. And honestly, in my opinion, if you're looking for a nice tree, go with the white pine if you can find them. The next is actually a tree that is, I'm actually getting this one from the BC's website. And it's a, this tree, it has, is very large, reaching heights of 85 meters. Now, 85 meters in feet, well, that would be about 278 feet. So very large trees on the coast, and about 42 meters in the interior. So about the size of the white pine. Older trees have a long branch-free trunk and a short cylindrical crown with a flattened top. And there are two varieties of this: coastal and interior. The name of this is the Pseudotsuga menziesi, otherwise known as the Douglas fir. The needles are flat with a pointed tip, and the upper surface is bright yellowish green with a single groove down the center. The lower surface is paler. The needles appear to stand out around the twig. Cones are 5 to 11 centimeters long, turning from green to gray as they mature. And between each stage, long three-pronged bracts are easy to see, and seeds are winged at the tip. The bark is smooth gray-brown with a gummy, resin-filled blisters when young, and bark becomes very thick with age and deeply grooved. The coastal variety of Douglas fir occurs along the southern mainland coast and across Vancouver Island, except for the very north tip. The interior variety occurs throughout southern British Columbia and north to Tikala Lake. The two varieties of Douglas fir occur in quite different ecosystems. The interior variety grows in a variety of habitats, including open forests with pine grass and mosses beneath. And on the coast, the forests are much more productive. They can grow with western red cedar, hemlock, and grand fir, with a lush layer of salal, huckleberries, Oregon grape, and sword fern beneath. Many animals eat Douglas fir seeds, including squirrels, chipmunks, mice, shrews, winter wrens, and crossbills. Bears often scrape off the bark on young trees and eat the sap layer underneath. There's also uses that the Aboriginals use them for. Aboriginal people in the south part of the province had many uses for Douglas fir. They used the wood and the boughs as fuel for pit cooking. They also used it for fishing hooks and for handles. Douglas fir boughs were frequently used for covering the floors of lodges and sweat lodges. Douglas fir wood has been highly valued since the first Europeans exported lumber in the 18th century. This dense wood is exceptionally hard, stiff, and durable. Its strength and availability in large dimensions make it outstanding for heavy-duty construction such as wharfs, trestles, bridge parts, and commercial buildings. Weirdly enough, because it is not a true fir, the common name is hyphenated. It was named after David Douglas, the Scottish botanist who introduced many of British Columbia's native conifers to Europe. That is just an amazing story about the Douglas fir. And unlike the other ones, which we kind of know a little bit about, Douglas fir has a really interesting, more deeply rooted, you know, history. And I find that amazing. And Douglas fir is one that I don't know too much about. But it is there. And it is just a really nice, looks just like a very nice Christmas tree. The last one we're going to cover before we take a quick musical break here on CILU 102.7 FM is one that I guarantee you almost everyone has seen, as this tree is everywhere in Northern Ontario. Walk into any forest and it's guaranteed to be one of the first evergreen trees you see. And I'm sure most people have it. However, it might throw people off as it looks very similar to spruce trees. It's one of the most recognizable trees in Ontario. It's tall and narrow and tapers to a skinny point at the top. It looks a bit like a church steeple. And when the tree is young, its bark is covered in sap blisters. The sticky sap is always on the tree, so you got to be careful to not brush against it. Its cones are barrel-shaped and grayish-brown and are 4 to 10 centimeters long. And its needles are 2 to 4 centimeters long and dark and shiny gray with two white bands underneath. It grows in a variety of climates and temperatures and is found across Ontario. They grow up to 30 meters tall, with a trunk 60 centimeters in diameter. It tolerates different moisture levels, and it can tolerate shade, and grows in a variety of soils. 60 centimeters, by the way, would be about 2 feet. The roots of this tree don't go very deep in the soil. They've been known to blow down during extremely high winds, so just make sure that if you plant one, it's in a sheltered area or away from a house. When they grow in a group of other trees, the branches at the bottom of the tree die and dry out. And when in open, the tree gets more sunlight and the lower branches stay green all the way to the ground. Interesting fact, the reason they are used as Christmas trees is because they have a wonderful scent, and the needles stay on the tree for a long time after it's been cut down. The scientific name is the Abies balsamea. By now, I'm sure most people know what it is. The tree is the balsam fir.